Welcome to the Career Conversations podcast, brought to you by Hunter Recruitment Group, and I'm your host, Craig McGregor. And today, this is an amazing conversation with such an interesting character, Lucas Nadiotis. Lucas is one of our customers. He's currently a physiotherapist with an amazing community-based organization called the Cadence Center. And please, I encourage you to listen to this podcast just to hear about the amazing work that this center does. But Lucas's story is such a winding journey of education, experience, passion, and a dedication to finally find a role where he always wanted to be. So if you love hearing about the turns and twists of individuals' passion and career exploration, then sit back and enjoy this awesome career conversation with Lucas. Okay, so welcome to the Career Conversations podcast, Lucas Nadiotis, is that right?
Nadiotis.
I was going to get you to introduce yourself because I was like, I call you Lucas all the time, and that last name always nearly gets. Where's that last name come from?
Greek Cypriot.
Okay.
So mum and dad are Greek Cypriot, born and raised in Cyprus. They'd lived there basically until well into their 30s. Then dad moved over to South Africa in the 70s after the war in Cyprus. And he went over there to be with his brother, who was living there at the time. Ended up staying there, really. So, look, what ended up happening, his brother was over there. They were working together. Unfortunately, his brother's wife got killed not long after his brother then passed away. Left my dad with three boys, their three kids. So he felt obligated to stay in South Africa. Finally, they managed to work things out, get care for the boys. Dad flew back to Cyprus, met mum. 2 months later, they flew back to South Africa, married, and they've basically been there ever since until 2017, hence my accent. So every once in a while, you'll hear the odd word. That's right. And it's not a strong South African accent, but every now and then the odd word comes out. People tell me room and broom are two very strong ones that have stayed.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so then you guys are over here. And yeah, I wanted to talk to you about your career today.
Yep.
And we've got to know each other through the Cadence Center based in Newcastle. So I want to start there before we jump in and really explore the twists and turns of your career. Tell us about the Cadence Center and what the Cadence Center does.
So the Cadence Center is essentially a exercise oncology charity that was set up by my mother-in-law, Sue Clark Petrollo, and myself in 2017. So my mum-in-law, Sue, had three different cancers, and she found that the support sort of ended after you left the hospital system. So the doctors, the nurses, the surgeons, the treating medical practitioners were all fantastic. But then as soon as you left the hospital system, you're on your own. And so to cut a long story short, her family told her to stop whinging about it and do something.
Yeah, great.
So she did. She secured some funds and managed to set up the Cadence Center. The missing link then was a physio or an exercise physiologist.
So setting up the Cadence Center, what was her thoughts around that? So she's obviously, you said she's lack of support. What was the support that she needed?
So when you are finished your treatment, your body's depleted. You've got, they talk about this new body that you have because of all the treatments and the surgeries that you go through. And people want to get back to normal, but they don't really know what normal is.
Yep.
And that was the position she was in. And she'd find herself trying to get back to exercise, but would end up hurting herself. And so this is the service that was missing for those people.
So like a normal gym type that wouldn't really understand what she'd gone through?
Not really. No, that's right. There's no one in a normal gym that's actually qualified to give you advice on where to rebuild and where to start. The other thing is sometimes normal gyms can be intimidating, particularly for those of us that, you know, are older or frail or have been through treatment and have lost their hair. And don't quite look the norm of a person attending a normal gym, a healthy, abled body, if you like. Mm. And so that's what she wanted to create, a place that's comfortable, a community for people to go in, get some specialist physio or exercise physiology advice, and to start to rebuild themselves, to get back to, if you like, their norm.
I love that you use that word community, because the couple of times that I've gone out to visit your site, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, it is. I think everybody there has the one thing in common. They've either have or had cancer or a chronic illness. And so no one feels out. You know, they all feel as part of this little group and are actually comfortable being in that space and talking about it. So I think it's really good, because oftentimes we have people with the same cancer, but they may be 3 to 6 months apart treatment-wise.
Yeah, okay.
And so you can find that support that you need from within to just guide you a little bit along the way, to tell you what to expect, to tell you the challenges that they had, to tell you little bits or little gold coins, if you like, that just get you through to that next phase.
And so Sue's idea to start this community, so it's based around exercise. So it's essentially a gym that you guys have set up, isn't it? But tell me about more of the specifics, the programs that you guys are creating.
So we like to call it a clinic.
Clinic, okay.
Yeah. And we use an evidence-based approach. So there's multiple lines of evidence now that outline the importance of exercise when people are going through cancer treatment. So your Clinical Oncology Society of Australia, for example, has recommended that exercise be an adjunct therapy to people going through treatment. And so the clinic was set up based around this. We bring in the exercise evidence, and instead of doing more research, we translate it into practice, which I think is miles ahead of the game. You'll still see, you know, multiple institutions doing research in the cancer space. Well, we've gone that step ahead and are actually making it practice.
Yeah, right.
Which is why I think it's such a crucial service and such a beneficial service for Newcastle and the Hunter.
Yeah. Is there anywhere else that does what you guys do?
Not that I know of. So Prue Cormie is an exercise physiologist who really is quite heavily involved in the research side of things. She may have a couple of little setups in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
There may be a practice in Sydney, but as far as being in the charitable space, we're the only ones.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about that bit. So it's being charitable. So how do you survive? How does the organisation run effectively?
Yeah, good question. So fundraising. So essentially we rely on fundraising. We rely on donations. We do charge people a nominal fee because we feel that gives them buy-in. And so it basically makes them accountable and gives them ownership of what they're attending. The government, or the federal government, has also given us a grant, which has allowed us to rebuild, line things up again, and put together a sustainable model going forward.
Yeah, okay.
So we've got 4 years of funding, around $250,000 a year.
Awesome.
Yeah, which is fantastic for us.
And do you think that's a result of the work that you've done being that sort of, like you say, it's kind of like a hybrid research / implementation rather than just a research body?
Yeah, definitely. So there's that element of it, but then there's also the uproar that the community...
The need.
Yeah, that the community sort of put forward. We had a petition during COVID that attracted close to 14,000 signatures, and... I think that, you know, played a big part in at least getting people to listen.
Yeah, well, it's not many people who haven't been touched by cancer, either personally or through their family. So it's a big, I suppose, emotional need. But it's a, like your mother-in-law went through, it's a not understood need in terms of rebuilding your body. But I think, speaking to you guys earlier, you also are treatment, is that right? So you're getting people ready for chemotherapy and other treatments?
Yeah, so we do prehabilitation there.
Prehabilitation.
Like, so essentially what happens is some people go through what's called neoadjuvant chemo. So what the doctors want to do is shrink the tumour before they cut it out.
Okay.
And so they put them on quite a heavy dose of chemotherapy. That sort of knocks them for six and leaves them feeling frail, weak, and still quite unwell. The trouble is that doctors only have a small window of opportunity before that starts to grow again, where they need to operate. The trouble is the person's left too unfit and too unwell most of the time to actually get through the surgery, which is where we come in. So some testing is done at the John Hunter Hospital. It's called cardiopulmonary exercise testing. Basically what it does, it gives you it gives us the patient's peak VO2 and anaerobic threshold, two of those which are predictors of surgical outcome. So essentially what we do is we improve their peak VO2 and their AT, and then get them through the surgery. Awesome. So I think part of the funding that we receive also played on this a fair bit. Essentially, we're reducing length of stay, post-operative complications, and ICU admission rates, which is a winner for the health service.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
That's really
good. So it's really cool and really innovative. And I can't say too much about it now, but we've got a randomized control trial that's about to kick off within the next month or so with the John Hunter Hospital, that will allow us to put some of these into practice and hopefully then be able to roll the findings out nationally.
Is there a opportunity from, let's talk about the business side of things, to replicate and scale and drop in a Cadence Centre in Cairns, in Perth, in London?
100%. So our model is very, very reproducible and very well needed all over the place. So if we were to drop another one, it would probably be in one of the bigger cities where you've got your oncology hospitals.
Yeah, big hospital.
Treating hospitals.
Yeah, okay.
But yes, absolutely.
What about the... Because it's so positive what you're doing. There's got to be some negativity to it in terms of sometimes, I'm guessing, the survivor rate, that sort of stuff. How do you guys deal with the emotional side of what you do?
So we've actually got a clinical oncology psych on our board.
Okay.
So she's been kind enough to come out and have a couple of talks to us. Mm-hmm. And it's really allows you and helps you put some boundaries up. And that's one of the talks I have with my staff when they're in their very first week.
Yeah.
You know, as much as you want to build rapport and get to know those people, which is just second nature, it's something you've got to be really careful of, because people essentially, some don't make it, unfortunately, given the stages that they're at.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the greatest challenges in working in that role.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So really passionate. I see what you do about that. Let's go back to the start. Tell me about young Lucas and what he thought he'd want to do and where he started from a career perspective.
Young Lucas.
Yeah.
Gosh, we're going back.
Younger, still young.
So, look, as a child, I always wanted to be a fireman.
Yep.
That was my dream. I remember being in year two or year three at school and, you know, towards the end of the class, you're meant to draw a picture. Well, I was always that guy drawing a burning building with a firefighter down on the side, either cooking a snag in the fire burning or putting it out, depending on how I felt on the day.
Yep.
Fireys are in my family. I'm an on-call firefighter now, so I'm a fourth-generation firefighter.
Yep.
So that was my big dream as a child, either that or to play professional sports somewhere, which didn't end up happening quite the way I foresaw it. And so,
what sport?
Yeah, professional sport. I wanted to be a
which one?
Professional rugby player as a kid.
Yep.
I don't have the size for it.
Yep.
And I just sort of lost interest as I got older.
Mm-hmm.
So firefighting always was at the front of my mind. But then it's interesting because living in South Africa, you've got to pick a profession that makes you money. Because if you don't have money, you and your family don't survive.
Yeah, it's a different society over there in terms of class and
definitely
welfare.
And so you pick the things that make you money, or at least on paper will make you money. So being a lawyer, being an accountant, being a doctor.
Yep.
So I opted to do law to start with. Started my law degree, in South Africa. I sort of kicked it off and then I was told that the semester's too late, I've got to pull out. So I thought, oh, well. You know, I'm going to go to Cyprus on a holiday to visit my nan.
Yeah, okay.
So I did, and I ended up staying there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there for 3 years. I did 2 years of law there, and I joined the military because it's conscription military service. I sort of had to. They wouldn't let me leave the country until I'd done it.
Yeah, right.
So
tell us about that. Was it enjoyable? Was it something that you thought, wow, this is something I could do for a career, or was it just something you had to do?
It's something I had to do. Yep. Again, there was a firefighting element to that military that I particularly enjoyed and got stuck into. And really, because I've been brought up in South Africa, I didn't have to do the full 24 or 25 months, which is what all my friends had to do. I was there for 6 months.
Oh, okay.
So they put me through basic training. They gave me a heavy rigid vehicle license and told me to drive the petrol trucks around to refill the tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did for 6 months.
Yep.
So in, happy to get out. After that, I moved to the UK where I finished my law degree. And again, then got into the fire service there. But Jenna and I, my wife Jenna and I, had to leave and go to Canada because my mum-in-law fell unwell with cancer.
Yeah, okay.
And we weren't quite sure what was going to happen at the time. So mm-hmm. off we went to Canada, where we stayed with them for 6 or 8 months
mm-hmm.
and then moved to Australia. So pursuing the fire service career there, or career here earlier on, was quite challenging because it is a very difficult and competitive profession to get into.
Yep.
So I thought to myself, well, what's the second best thing that I can do, that I want to do, if I can't join the fire brigade? And it was physio. The sporting background.
Yeah, I was going to say, how is that? Because it's different. Mm. It's not firefighting. How are they aligned? How is that the second choice for you?
Well, the way I align them is, I was always a sporty and active guy. And like most sporty, active people, you get injuries.
Yep.
And so I was fascinated by the injury element of what was happening to me. And you'd always see a physio and I thought, wow, these people are amazing. They can actually diagnose what's wrong with me. And fortunately, I'd seen some good ones and they were spot on. And that was it for me. I thought, well, if I'm not going to firefight, I'm going to physio. And so I thought to myself, well, I'll apply to the University of Newcastle, which I did. And I got on the course there.
So can I ask a question? Got a law degree.
I do.
Why didn't you pursue law?
So I'm a fairly active guy.
Yep.
And being a lawyer involved sitting behind a desk for a lot of hours during the day. When Jen and I first moved back to Australia, I actually got a job in insurance. And that all but drove me crazy. I was sitting for 12 hours a day.
Yeah. Looking
at policies that I found particularly quite boring.
So why did you do the law in the first place then?
Well, again, it was that thing, living in South Africa, okay. You do something to make you money.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that I had to pursue some such career. Yeah.
So you've done that based on dollars and it's not you.
And it's just not me.
Yeah.
No. And I think that realization, as well as my wife telling me I'm going crazy, you know, I need to do something different, led me to, and fortunately her immense support allowed us to juggle things,
yep.
work things as a family, and then start my physio degree.
Yep. Okay. So did you do that here locally?
Newcastle University.
Yeah, great.
Yep. Yeah. So I started that in 2012 or 11 or 12.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Managed to get through the degree. It's a fantastic course.
Yep.
Fantastic institution. And I can't vouch for it enough.
Okay. Yep. And so then from there, where did you go once you got your degree? Where was your first physio?
So first physio job was a new graduate opportunity that I got with Sport and Spine in Adamstown.
Okay.
The reason I got into them is because they treated me in the past.
Okay. And so you knew them? Yeah.
So I knew them. But they also run a fantastic new graduate program where essentially the owners there, Chris and Carolyn, will give the new graduate some time and teach you the things you need to know to make it in that space. Knowing that, so I knew that early on. So within my second year of physio, I knew, you know, these guys down the road are really quite good at what they do. I'd love to learn from them. So I actually volunteered my time once or twice a week just to go in on a Tuesday or a Thursday as a body. So where they needed a body for the new grad to practice on to run special tests and assessments and diagnostic tools.
Free massage and stuff. Is that what you're doing?
Not really. Not really. So the way they do it is they'd break it up, you know, one day you'd do the knee and you'd do a full knee examination, then you'd do the hip, then the shoulder, then the neck, et cetera, et cetera. And so over time I got to know them and fortunately I gained some great skills from that. And I knew that that's where I wanted to be to start with.
Yep.
So did my new graduate year with them. After that, I actually took a deviation from musculoskeletal, which is what I was doing, and I moved into the children's hospital.
Yeah, okay. How did that happen?
So I actually did a placement. I think it was my final placement in my fourth year was with a children's hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really stayed connected there with the manager at the time. And when a job came up, I applied for it. She'd known me there being a student and I was fortunate enough to get it.
Okay. Why do you think the children's sector or the children's hospital was a driver for you? What took you towards that path?
So I enjoyed the musculoskeletal side of things, but I knew that as an outpatient physio in pediatrics, I'd get a lot of exposure to a different side of musculoskeletal medicine.
Mm.
And so really I'd see the musculoskeletal kids in the children's hospital, which was incredibly attractive to me because it was different and it was a challenge and there was more to learn.
Mm.
As well as getting a little bit of diversity where I could cover the wards, you know, and do some different sort of outpatients as well, not just musculoskeletal. So it was bringing in a new set of skills for me that I found enjoyable.
Yeah. All right. And so then after the hospital, what was next?
So the hospital was ongoing and my mum-in-law Sue knocked on my door and said to me, I need a physio.
Okay.
I said, what have you done to yourself? And she said, no.
No.
The Caden Centre needs a physio.
Okay.
And so like a good son-in-law, I decided to listen and basically then on a part-time basis moved into Caden. I think it was just 1 or 2 days a week. So I was doing both roles.
Yeah.
In the meantime, working at the hospital, then on a couple the other couple of days a week, I was just setting up programs at Caden. And so what that meant was putting the business in place from the physio / EP operational side.
Mm-hmm.
So what things would look like when a patient walked in, you know, what the programs would look like, educating myself on the cancer space and the physio side of the cancer space.
So you said EP then.
I did.
Let's talk about what an EP is.
So an EP is an exercise physiologist.
Yeah, and we're going to say, what's the difference, physio and EP?
So my understanding is that physios can diagnose injuries or people see physios for the diagnostic side of injuries.
Yep.
The exercise physiologists help with the rehabilitation of things. So if, for example, someone does their ACL, which is a ligament in the knee, the physio might diagnose the ACL injury, but then could send them to an exercise physiologist with some instructions on what that rehabilitation should look like.
Hmm. Tell me about at the Caden Centre, how those two work together.
So the Caden Centre, the way we work there is you have the exercise side of cancer, which is almost there's a little bit of crossover here. So again, Caden physios are not diagnosing anything on the oncology side. They are just prescribing exercises around musculoskeletal injuries that people have. Our EPs there are doing essentially the same thing.
Yep.
So there's really is a lot of crossover between the two professions there. The difference is that if, for example, someone who has breast cancer comes in, some of our physios are lymphedema therapists.
Yeah,
and so they train in the lymphedema side of things.
Yep.
Or if a patient has cording or some such other issue, that's where the physios can help that I believe the EPs are not trained in.
I want to know about, so would you have gone into this vocation if it wasn't for Sue? Is this a path you would have taken, do you think?
It's an interesting question. Had I been presented, yes, I would have.
Yeah.
I would have, but so it
Sue
never
was the
really
door.
Existed.
Sue was the door.
Sue was the door to something that never really existed or that was so few and far
field.
Between that, you know, you wouldn't think about it.
No.
When it was presented to me first, I was also, you know, I thought to myself, well, do physios actually do this? Is there a role for me here? Mm. And so essentially we developed and built in this new role.
Mm. What about the greater role? So a physio... You know, if I think about a physio like myself, I've had injuries before. I go see the reception, I walk in, physio does diagnosis, gives me exercises. I come back and we look at how I'm progressing.
Yep.
Your role at the Caden Centre is so much bigger than that. How about that side of what you're doing from business development, from grants to managing people to creating programs? Step me through how that evolution of Lucas has been.
Gosh, you know, I think that came quicker than I expected.
Okay.
And also, I initially, in my mind, I was a physio and I needed to treat people.
Mm.
But I never thought that I'd be in the management side of things at all, at least not this early on in my career. Because again, in my head, you know, I'd been graduated 4 or so years. What do I know about business? I'm still learning physio.
Mm.
So that's been really, it's been really interesting. And I think when it's a business that you've set up or helped set up, these sort of things fall into your lap because there's no one else to do them.
Mm.
You know, someone says something and all of a sudden a light bulb goes off and goes, hang on, you know, we need to be doing that. We need to be promoting or branding or, you know, talking to the doctors.
Yeah.
And so I think that was just the growth of Lucas, if you like. And by, you know, I'm by no means perfect at it, but I think I somewhat recognize what the Cadence Center needs.
Yeah.
And I think it shows with the funding and with the branding and recognition that we have at the moment that it's worked.
Do you enjoy well. Those extra items, that the management, the business development? Have you enjoyed that side of the role?
Yeah, like anything, it has its challenges. But it's certainly an area of growth for me and certainly something that I look forward to doing when I go to work every day. Mm. So, yes, I have.
Okay.
Mm.
So, we're going to go a little bit... It's kind of not right step now as after we've listened to the start of your journey.
Mm.
You're moving into firefighting.
I am.
The passion has stayed.
The passion has stayed.
Yeah.
The passion never really left.
Yeah, okay.
I just thought to myself... So, it takes a while to get in, and it's a very challenging process to get in. But I thought to myself, you know, I still really want to do this. So I'd oftentimes be driving to work and go, gosh, you know, I really want to do this thing. And one day I spoke to my wife and said, look, I still want to give this a crack. I'm, you know, 36 years old at the time.
Yep.
And thought, well, if it's going to be any time, it better be now.
Yep.
Because I don't want to wait too many more years. Yeah, and I don't want to look back going, is that a profession I should have pursued?
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, and so again, fortunately, with some great family support, I managed to put a plan in place. So I did a lot of additional studying. I've always been a fit guy, so I've kept my fitness up. Again, I haven't interviewed for so long, you know, so I needed to get those skills up and running again. So I'd arrange mock interviews and all that sort of stuff that we can go into. But essentially, it was pre-COVID, the year before COVID, that I thought, you know what, I'm giving this a good go.
Okay.
And so looked at my timetable. We've got the boys at home, so life is very busy. I needed to make time, find quiet time, and essentially prepare myself to get into this competitive profession.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's step through that. So that's, what, 3 or 4 years of until you... Because you've just landed the dream role.
I have.
Before we talk about that, let's go through that process. So, yeah, step me through what you had to do to get it.
So recruitment process?
Yeah.
So you start with an online application. Then you've got online psychometric testing. Once you pass that, you've got a physical that you've got to pass.
Yep.
If you've passed the physical, you've got an assessment center, then you've got an interview, then you've got a medical, then you've got a job offer.
Yeah, right.
So depending on which brigade you apply for, it can take anywhere from 6 months to 2 years, sometimes even longer. Yep. So that's just for the recruitment process. Then there's the waiting pool.
Hmm.
So once you've
successfully recruited, but then you're in the pool waiting for an assignment.
Waiting for an assignment or waiting for a recruit course to run.
Okay.
Yep. Or waiting to get assigned to a recruit course that's scheduled within the next 12 to 18 months.
When you're in that pool, can that be multiple areas of the brigade, or is it specifically where you're going into?
So the way it works is each state has their own brigade.
Okay.
Except for air services, which is the federal brigade
that covers the airports. Which is where you're going to.
Which is where I'm going to.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So how is it different? What's the difference?
So the main difference is the aviation rescue guys deal with aircraft incidents. So you look after the aerodrome. So basically everything that happens in that airport space is your space. Okay. And that can be anything from fires to medical to aviation emergencies to motor vehicle accidents.
And is that just... So in New South Wales, is it just Sydney Airport or is it Newcastle Airport's included in that space? So
Newcastle Airport is not included at this stage. Mm-hmm. They've got the RAF fireys that cover that. So it's Sydney...
Yeah, because it's RAF land.
Yeah. It's Sydney, it's Coffs Harbour. There's not very many around New South Wales. I think there's about 27 airports nationally.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
That the federal
look after. So there's... Mascot now, and then Badgerys Creek is opening up in 2025.
Okay.
So they'll be the two major airports in Sydney.
And so that's where you're going to be based. You're going to be working at the Mascot Airport as a firefighter for that site.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about the why. Why is that you? Why are you the firefighter guy?
I hate sitting still.
Yep.
There's career progression.
Yeah, okay.
Their flexibility is a huge part of it.
Yep.
So the way the rosters work, you're 24 hours on, 24 off, 24 on, then 5 off.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually warrants me and gives me the time to spend with my family. So yep. we've got a young family, and with my wife and I both working 9-to-5 jobs Monday to Friday, it makes it a little bit tricky.
Yeah.
There's the fitness side of things. So essentially you're paid to keep fit,
yep.
which is always a plus in my books. And then there's just the diversity that the role offers, you know.
What about, you said you loved sport growing up. I see firefighters as a team, that team environment or entity. Is that something that you think?
Definitely. So you're always working as part of a crew. Mm. So you've always got a core group of people around you that you end up living with, essentially, mm. that you get to know really well, that you're attending these, you know, emergencies with. So you're very reliant on the guy next to you and ensuring that their skills, their training is up so you can do what it is you need to do.
Yep.
So all that's incredibly appealing to me. Plus, I think a lot of the skills and attributes that I've learned in my physio career are translatable.
Hmm.
You know, for example, I enjoy working with diverse groups of people, and I have as a physio, whether it's children, elderly people, different injuries, whatever it might be, that it's diverse. Essentially, when you're serving the community as a fiery, you're working with a diverse group of people because mm. those people make up your community. There's the communication element. As a physio, being able to adapt my communication style to ensure that those I'm talking to actually understand what it is I'm saying, because you get the buy-in from them and they know what they then need to do to get better. Well, the fire is the same thing. When you're on a fire ground, you've got to be communicating effectively and efficiently with your team. There's the team role, the teamwork element. As a physio, I work as part of the team to prehabilitate people prior to their surgery, if you like, at the mm-hmm. Cadence Center.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as a fiery, you're working as part of a team to deal with the emergency in front of you. There's problem solving. As a physio, you're problem solving injuries. As a fiery, you're problem solving things on the fire ground. I can go on, but there's resilience, there's yeah. adaptability, there's, you know, following instructions. You know, at the Cadence Center now, there's a board of directors
yep.
and I'm essentially responsible to that board of directors. While in the fireys, there's my captain
or
going above him, there's the yep. commander, there's the chain of command. So there's a lot of overlap for yeah. myself, or the way I see it anyway. So I can take some really good skills that I've learned over into that profession.
No, and it's great that, you know, I love it that you've had this dream all your life and now you're pursuing it. Go for it. Question though, why did you choose the federal side and the airports versus working here in Maitland as a firefighter?
Good question. So I essentially have taken the first one to offer me a job.
Yeah, okay.
Because I wanted to be in the space.
Yeah.
So
can you transition from federal to state?
You can't.
Okay.
But whatever, there is recognition of prior learning. So yep. if I do ever end up shifting into the state side of things,
yeah.
That work that I've done is recognized. So okay. I'll move over into a leading fiery role as opposed to starting from scratch again.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I actually also got an offer up in Queensland.
Yeah, right.
With Queensland Fire and Emergency Service. But
yep.
it means the family has to shift.
Too far.
Which I don't really want to do. My yep. boys love the school they're in. Jenna's got a great job.
Yep.
And if I move up to Queensland, it makes it hard to work alongside with Caden.
Yeah. Well, that's the next question. How does working, because you're still passionate about the Caden Centre.
Yep.
You're not giving that up, I'm thinking?
Not at all.
No. So that shift pattern, you'll be able to work around that to be able to still contribute to the success of the Caden Centre.
Yeah, that's the plan.
So how's that going to work for you?
I'll align it with my shifts. Yep. Essentially, I work really 3 days out of every 8.
Yep.
So I've got an additional 5 days to put time into Caden. I probably won't be there. I won't be there full time, but I'll be available to help out as needed. I will stay on the board with Caden yep. to keep oversight yep. going with what's going on. And I think with the way the digital world is working these days, I've got a pretty good training program that I run through the Caden Center. Mm. So I can do that with the new staff via distance.
Yep.
So I actually fly to Melbourne on tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
To start recruits on Monday.
Yep.
And the plan is that some evenings I'll set up some time with some of the new guys over at Caden or the new EPs
mm-hmm.
and just problem solve and run through some cases that they have to essentially make sure that they're on track and they're getting the training they need while I'm away.
It's really... No. I was going to say most people would exit role, jump into new role, forget old role.
Mm.
can't do that with the Cadence Centre, can you? Why is that?
No, because I love what we've built, and because I love what it gives the community.
Mm.
And I see how necessary it is, and I see the benefit of a lot of the people. So we've had clients that have been there for 4 or 5 years now, and you know, it's their saving grace.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it's the only place they can go to get some community, and it's what's keeping them young.
Mm.
You know, so I can't let that go just yet.
Mm, awesome. Yeah. No, well, good luck as a firefighter. I think that, yeah, your passion for both Caden and the fires has come out in this interview. So I think it's a really good transition for you. So before we go, one formal question.
Yep.
We call it the time machine question for the Career Conversations podcast. If we could rewind the clock to 20-year-old Lucas, given what you know today, what advice would you give him?
Look, I'd probably tell him to be patient with the way things are going to fall into place in life. You know, I think that there's always this rush to get this next great thing. But I think that if you're patient with the way things are falling into place, and if you take everything, take what's coming, learn from it, and apply it going forward, happy days.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Lucas, and good luck with both careers going forward.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks so much to Lucas for sharing his story with us today, and in particular being so open with us about the journey that he's taken to get where he is today and following his passion. But also, it was just great to share with you all the Cadence Centre and the Cadence Centre's journey, and also the importance of the program that these guys are doing for the community. And Hunter Recruitment Group, we really resonate and we're driven to help these sorts of organisations. So really thankful to Lucas and to Susan for allowing us to be part of their journey. As Lucas mentioned, some of the opportunities to support the organisation is through funding. If you're listening to this in September of 2023, you can go to the Hunter Recruitment Group website. There's a blog article there. We're supporting Sweat for Survivors. You can make a donation, or you can go direct to the Cadence Centre website and make a donation to this really important community organisation that's helping people fight and survive cancer. So thanks again for listening to the Career Conversations podcast, brought to you by Hunter Recruitment Group. Until next time, I'm Craig McGregor.